You're listening to the 405 Exchange Podcast. My name is Ken Grandpierre, and today's episode is with the Shadow Boxers. 2 years ago, I caught these guys at Bowery Ballroom off the recommendation of a friend of mine. That memory sticks out to me because I vividly remember not looking into them before and being so glad that I went on such a cold basis. I mean, their live show completely blew me away. Particularly the contrast of their fun vibe and the clear sense of discipline that they have towards their craft. Fast forward to 2019, and the band has supported Justin Timberlake on a world tour, and now they're ready to unveil the next step of their career. On this episode of the podcast, I linked up with Matt, Scott, and Adam of the Shadow Boxers in Brooklyn ahead of a sold-out show that they had at Rough Trade. And together we discuss what these next steps look like, will look like, how different life is for them after the world tour, and why their creativity means everything to them. I should also mention that this talk was recorded at Rough Trade during business hours, and with that you'll hear some background music from the show. We recommend adjusting your volume to a lower frequency so that way you have the best listening experience. This is the 405 Exchange with the Shadow Boxers. Enjoy. Thanks for taking the time to chat, guys.
Yeah,
hey, thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Yeah, you guys have been to New York loads over the years to play shows. We were just talking now about how I caught you last at Bowery Ballroom. I think it was like 2 years ago, roughly, or maybe even three. I wonder, with the amount of times you go to a city like this one or any other one, does it end up feeling like a bit of a second home for you?
Well, maybe Matt should answer that.
I mean, yeah, New York is my home, or where I'm from at least. So, yeah, it does. But I think... New York especially feels like a second home, I think, for this band, because more so than any city that we've played in, we've grown with it. We've started at...
what was that called?
Pianos? Lower East Side?
No, we were somewhere before that, where like Dylan used to play. What was that?
Bitter End.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
And we just like, every time we came back, it felt like we were growing with the city. So it does feel like a second home.
That's amazing. For people, for context, for people listening who might not be familiar, Bitter End is like pretty much as small as it could get in terms of bar size.
Great room,
but like...
You never want to like outnumber your audience on stage.
That place is close.
It is cool though. It's sort of been... New York has always been sort of our barometer of how we're doing in terms of the live shows that we've been playing. It started at the Bitter End, then it went to Pianos, then it went to the Mercury Lounge, then it went to the Mercury Lounge two times in a row. Then I went to the Bowery Ballroom, and then Bowery Ballroom twice.
And Brooklyn Bowl.
Brooklyn Bowl.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's just a good indication of where we're at. And it always feels fun to come back, because we do have a lot of family here and friends.
That's amazing. I think what's really beautiful is that clearly for there to be so much growth in just a few short years like that, it just shows that something's working with the live show, that people keep coming back to see it. And obviously bringing friends and there's new people, but you're getting people coming back time and time again.
Yeah, the truth is that for many years we weren't releasing music for a lot of factors, but we were still touring. So the only real way we had to gauge whether people were staying engaged with us was to come here and play a show and see who came out and how many people and what the vibe was. So, you know, right now this show we're playing tonight is like a little bit of a weird time. We're not on a tour. It's just sort of a one-off. We kind of want to just play. Let's go play a show. And we're like nearing the end of finishing a record, and we're just kind of excited to like exhale all of that tonight and hang out.
It's great seeing like artists take advantage of the ability to do that, because it's like obviously when you're in a studio space making an album, it can feel very focal and kind of, I don't want to say one track, but be very much like we're focused on this.
Yeah.
But to have the ability to play a show and just kind of like, you know, get loose, that's really great.
Yeah, yeah, that's what tonight's all about for us, because we, you know, we're about to start releasing a ton of music and sort of like getting the muscles back of what it's like to play live. So
nice. Yeah. I'm gonna ask loads about that. Before I do, I want to ask about something where, I mean, we're gonna talk a fair bit about the music, but is it possible to bring up how not too long back you wrapped up a big world tour of Justin Timberlake?
Yeah, we don't talk about that.
Well, that's one of those things that when I saw that it was announced that you guys would be opening, I was like, oh man, people in these arenas and these stadiums don't know what they're in for.
Yeah.
And I knew that with the context of having seen you guys live, but I could imagine it must have been a bit of a thing of like, wow, what's it actually gonna be like?
Absolutely.
What was that experience like for you to like not just open up for a guy like that, but to tour and play these rooms?
I think one of the cool things about that was it was a combination of saying, okay, we need to step our game up in really all facets, and let's do what we do, you know? And I think that experience was sort of those two thought philosophies wrapped into each other. In one sense, we know we've played hundreds and hundreds of shows over the years. We're not some newly constructed band. We've been road tested. We've played all kinds of shows. You mentioned the Bowery, you know, we've played a lot of shows like that in front of people. We know how to get an audience going. So at the wall we could always lean on was that feeling. Then it's like, how do we just elevate the things we do and apply it to a situation which we've never been in? It was a circular stage with actually some sort of weird shapes that we were sort of put onto. We've never played in an arena before. We have to sort of re-gear the set to aim for the highest seats in the top sections and balconies, which is different than being in a small club, which is what we're used to.
Yeah.
And then also we're opening for Justin Timberlake, who is one of the most, you know, iconic performers of our time and does a lot of the things that we like to do really well to the highest degree. So by comparison, we needed to just get it together, you know.
And also really, like, it was the realization that nobody there was there to see us, you know? And so we had 30 minutes to convince people that this wasn't gonna be like a long pee break and like go get your popcorn and get ready. So yeah, it was a lot of like, how do we pack as much energy and hooks into 30 minutes as we possibly can to a room of people who, you know, probably don't want to hear us.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a right, weird place to start from, and you really have to win people over, and it was an incredible experience for us.
You know, it's really beautiful though, like hearing you discuss it and just hearing how much thought you went into just making sure the crowd was engaged. I really love hearing that, especially the way you're describing people like at the top there. I've definitely talked to some artists where they talk about opening up for acts at theaters and arenas, and it's very much an idea of like, I better just go out there and hope for the best. But when I hear you describe that, I can almost imagine like during soundcheck, one of you is going to the top there and making sure you knew exactly how it sounded. Like, that to me sounds like a dedication to your craft.
We just tried to squeeze every drop out of it that we could.
It was Shadow Boxer's concentrate.
Yeah.
I like the sound
of
it.
That's what it was.
So
no pulp.
So tell me this, describe to me where the band was at after that tour, creatively speaking. Like, where were you guys at?
Honestly, we were kind of drained creatively. We'd spent 6 months on the road. It was incredibly rewarding. As Adam and Scott said, we learned so much getting the show together. But we also realized that we felt sort of like the Shadow Boxer's concentrate was maybe a little too aggressive, and we needed to sort of rethink how we wanted to display our strengths.
Yeah.
So we took a couple months off, we moved out to Los Angeles, and through Adam's family connection, we got a studio in the basement of a law firm.
Oh, wow.
That we were able to use, and we started looking at the material that we hadn't put out and our songwriting process and sort of figuring out how we wanted to best distill all these strengths into like the next creative sound. And we gave ourselves these guidelines and we tried to adhere to them as best we could. And we started writing and recording sort of the next batch of songs.
That's amazing. Well, that's one of the big reasons why I'm here to talk to you guys today, along with just the general story of what you guys are doing. This, by the time this comes out, your next track will be out. That track is called In the Dark, and I got to hear it, luckily. I feel pretty grateful for that. It's a very groovy track, and it's the start of essentially not introducing the world, but reintroducing the world to the Shadowboxer. They're showing a very new side to you, while still showing what you do best. How did this one come about? I'd love to hear about that.
So, I made a co-writing friend in Nashville right before we left town. This guy, Sammy Martin. And he had started collaborating with another beat maker, and they would send beats back and forth. And one day I was writing with Sammy, and he was like, you know what, I have this thing that I chopped up and screwed around with, and let's try this. He was visiting in LA at the time, and so we started writing a song. And it ended up being just like one of the most collaborative co-writes we've had, because I was there, but I started writing the song based off of a lyric that Scott had written like years prior and a concept. And then the song, you know, had sort of some bones by the end of the week, really. And then Adam came in with this awesome sort of bridge outro. And like a month later, the song just sounded completely different. And it took us a few months later to realize that it was like the absolute bullseye sonically, vibe wise, writing wise about, you know, what we wanted to put forward next.
It sounds like that was the experience that very much was needed when you describe where you were at after touring, where it almost sounds like an experience like this reminds you of just what songwriting can be.
Yeah. I mean, the truth is that after the tour and through like the whole Apollo process, Apollo was our last EP, it was very sort of, it was collaborative and you know, among the three of us in a big way, but also we were working with this producer named Kekov and Justin as well to produce the record. So a lot of these sort of our tendencies maybe and our like sonic concepts can sometimes get lost in that. Like the song can just end up taking on something it's a little bit out of your control. And we love Apollo, but we felt like after that tour and after touring those songs for as long as we did, it was like, let's just, what would happen if we just started producing ourselves? And we had learned over the years how to really express what we wanted to create and the identity that we wanted to create. And we finally had the skills to be able to create it on our own. And so getting this studio, moving to LA, and essentially just living in this studio has really allowed us to like hone in on our identity with just the three of us. And it's taken a long time and a lot of different producers to help sort of guide that for us.
Yeah.
But we're at the point now where it feels like the most authentic and honest that we've ever been lyrically and in terms of production. This feels like as quintessentially Shadowboxers as we've ever been able to create.
That's really beautiful.
It's exciting.
Yeah, and jumping off that, I mean, In the Dark also kicks off a brand new chapter of the band. Well, you'll be releasing a series of singles. At least that's how it was kind of put to me.
Yeah.
Can you go into how that idea came about and what it is exactly you'll be doing?
The release plan?
Yeah.
So, Adam just explained it very well. Like, we felt like this was the first group of songs in a very long time that really captured like us and who we are right now, and it was all the music that we had wanted to sort of make and sort of the sonic vision that we had always wanted to put forward. But we also realized that, you know, at the end of the day, we're still three writers, we're three voices. We have a lot of influences, and while we try to hit the center of the Venn diagram as often as we can, we wanted the singles to help guide listeners, to sort of ease people into what we're trying to do. So we had In the Dark as this first single, and the following singles are going to be really cohesive with themselves, with In the Dark. But we wanted to do singles because we wanted to sort of gradually take people on a journey before we drop a whole album, which is something we've been wanting to do for freaking ever.
I love hearing that. I recently heard an interview that the Pixies did, and they rarely do interviews, so it's kind of a funny thing to watch, because you could tell Black Francis is the front man. He's, like, not about it. And he said, like, the thing that frustrates him the most in terms of being a musician is that when he talks to journalists, they always want to find a way of associating a theme to a body of work rather than just actually taking them in as songs. And it right. kind of sounds like the way you're describing that, at least not that's not exactly how you feel, but with the releasing of the singles, it's going to kind of facilitate people experiencing the songs as individual entities in a way.
Yeah, it allows yes. each it allows the sun to shine on each song, whereas them being stacked in a 12, 14 song album, they often get lost. So that's definitely a plus of it. The second plus is, as Matt was saying, sort of breadcrumbing people towards the pot of gold that's at the end, this the thing that we want to sort of everyone to get on board with and everyone to understand, which has been hard for us. We've always struggled with even ourselves knowing exactly what it is that we want to do and what we want to say and how we want to come off to people. So this feels very cohesive. It's been our intention the whole time as we've been recording to really filter, and then filter again after we've sort of, from a production side, from a songwriting side, to get all of these things to really make sense together. And so, since we've given a lot of different looks to a lot of different people over the years, it was really important to us, especially with the landscape of how you can put out music these days being so open, yeah. you can do anything you want. So we don't want to be too precious about it, we don't want to overthink it too much, but we do want to sort of lead people to the water, to the watering hole, you know. And then by the time the album drops, you've already had however many singles we decide to put out. Let's for now call it 4 or 5 until we get to the album. And then after the album, we may release more after that. So it's just, we just kind of want to turn the valves on, open the floodgates, and just let it all start flowing out.
Yeah, you know, from hearing you guys talk about this, I can't help but feel like the overarching thing I'm getting from Shadowboxers in a general sense is that it's a very healthy band, because I feel like to have such self-awareness towards how you want to approach things, there must be such great communication amongst each other in that sense.
Well, I, it's, you know, we're...
he was looking for me, yeah!
No, because...
You get a lot of stuttering.
That's actually awesome to hear, yeah. Because it hasn't always been that way, and especially coming off of the road, like... The Europe run with Justin was really tough for us. We were in like really tight quarters the whole time, and it was like hot. There was our AC broke. We had a bad driver.
Oh no!
He's fine. I love you, Dave. But it was like we had stopped sort of talking to each other, you know, and we were just getting through it. And after that process, the three of us really had a lot of we put in a lot of effort to figure out how to communicate again and to be able to be honest and vulnerable with each other, because like this job we have is terrifying and it's scary and we're getting older every year, and it's like, you know, the realities of life are very real, and we had sort of not been talking about that for a long time and just kind of powering through. And I think this record that we're making is a real reflection of us coming to each other in that way.
That's a really beautiful thing.
Yeah.
You know, along with just everything we've discussed, a good amount of people who are listening probably came across the band by the Last Summer video and the song via Netflix. What's it been like? I mean, I'm always interested in asking artists about instances like this, because it's a beautiful thing when you get to put a song or a bit of content out into the world and people actually react to it when they get to see you at shows and come up to you. What's it been like to see people react to that particular song and video and like talk to you about it?
Well, that has happened side by side with the process that Adam was just talking about. So we are trying to communicate with ourselves, with each other again. We're trying to be honest. We're trying to sort of relieve any unnecessary pressures that are on us from every external force that we can fathom, and try and strip it down to what is it that the three of us do that we've done since we met and started playing together in a dorm room. And let's try and get back to that. It's gotten very big, and a lot of it's been great. A lot of it hasn't. We've been put through a lot of different machines and things, and things have come out that have been great and maybe not as good. What is the thing? What is the root? What is the core? And that has been just us singing three-part harmony on simple, well-written songs that we can do our thing on. And we had an opportunity to write a song for a movie called Last Summer. The producer of the movie reached out to us and asked us to write a song with the title of the movie. We watched the movie, and 2 days later, we wrote the song ourselves. 2 days later, we produced the song ourselves and had the version that everyone knows now. It was the most easy, natural process. And compared with a lot of the other things that we've done that have had a lot of other cooks in the kitchen and a lot of other sort of loopholes that need to go through in order to get out. Also, the fact that it was built into coming out with a movie made it really easy because we just turned it into them and they released it with the movie. So it just sort of reminded us that this can be really easy. This doesn't have to be as hung up in the trappings of industry stuff as much as it has been for us. So it's a relief. It's a relief to know that the thing we do in our sleep is a thing that's resonating with people, and a thing that we can play live at any point.
And the thing we want to do the most.
And a thing, mm-hmm. and a thing that we want to do that. You know, it's tracked a lot better than a lot of the songs that had way bigger budgets and way more sort of expensive stuff involved. So
I think a true testament to that is how genuine the song feels, and I feel like that's another attribute as well with Into the Dark. I mean, I almost think this might be a weird question, but do you ever find yourselves either discussing that or thinking about it on an individualistic level? Like, does this song that we're working on feel genuine?
Oh yeah, with every song. Yeah, and that's been a huge sort of thesis for this body of work that we're working on now. Like, does this, would we say this? Like, would we actually say this? Would we actually, like, is this, like, the most important thing for this has been honesty. Yeah. And it's really great to hear that it's coming through.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things I was keen on asking you guys about, because again, it's really interesting to talk to you, seeing where you're at, especially because it's been quite a couple of years since the band's even started. And that leads me to this question about like how Woman Through the Wall came out 3 years ago and was your first single. How do you feel about that song now, particularly like the fact that people are still enjoying it? Because when I was like looking at the video a couple of days ago, just noticing the numbers, it's clear that incrementally you could tell it's like rising every week or month or whatever. Like, people are still going for that song. What's it like knowing that?
What's cool is that was pretty much self done as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
was Build to Beat.
And so was Build to Beat, right. So I think that every time someone learns about us and then they want to hear more, it's kind of like this, I mean, it's a very natural thing, this like high tide makes all boats rise philosophy, where they start to look at all the other things that are out there.
Yeah.
And that's one of those things that I think, like I was talking about last summer, is one of those things that we did early. We didn't think about it too much. We put it out because we hadn't put out something in a long time before that.
Yeah.
And it feels, you can tell, an audience can tell if it feels genuine and natural. And so, yeah, we love that song. We're playing it tonight. We even though we've been through so many different things, we return to that song and play it pretty much like it is on the record, because it feels like us still. You know, it doesn't feel like something, some tattoo we got 4 or 5 years ago that doesn't feel right anymore.
How many bands out there would envy the hell out of you from saying that? Like, because you could just think of it, there's loads of bands out there that probably wish they could feel that way about their first single. Like, that's a really special thing.
I mean, there's plenty of music that we've written that we don't play anymore.
Yeah.
So I don't think so.
It's a double-sided chord.
If you take the amount of time we've taken to put these songs out, let's hope that you can stand by them 5 years later.
I hope
that a lot of people can feel that way. We are very proud of that song, and 5 years from now we'll feel proud of it too, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I only have a couple more questions for you, but thanks again for taking the time to chat. It's really great being sat here with you guys.
Oh man, appreciate you.
Likewise.
Like I mentioned before, seeing you guys live, you know, one of the big things that was very clear to me within the first song, and I don't know why this, like, it did come across in the recordings, but seeing you live really cemented it to me, was that it's clear that you have a lot of love towards jazz, and it's clear to me that jazz has played like quite a prominent sense of influence. And I wonder how that love of jazz has influenced the songwriting recently, because I feel like it's definitely still prevalent, just naturally, in a way.
I think our love of jazz and just sort of, you know, R&B and soul and stuff that's maybe a little more heady, chordally speaking, theory-wise, yeah. We respect the artists who take all of that knowledge and don't use it to make their songs jazzier, quote unquote, but who take those songs, who take those chords and those ideas and scales and stuff, and they use those to make their songs more emotive. Like Stevie Wonder is the god of that.
We do like Steely Dan, though, who kind of falls outside of that.
we do love the Dan.
But the Dan are solid. How can
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, but they're throwing some changes.
They're throwing some changes in there. And they want you to know it.
Yeah. They probably don't need to do it, but they did it anyway.
Yeah.
So they want you, exactly. Like they're throwing out some changes and they want you to know it. And our goal is to throw out some changes and for you to not know it. Or for it to not be noticeable.
But not to take you out of the atmosphere that the song creates.
Yeah.
I did notice that when I saw you guys live that time, where it was like the times when you would get into like a bit of a jammy groove, I could tell that it was almost like kind of like partially one-upping each other with the time signature stuff. And I was
right.
like, that's kind of cool.
Well, there's another beautiful thing that's a happy accident, which is that we're not good enough to be just shredding on our instruments. We're the perfect level between being good enough to put some of the stuff in, but not good enough to like blow anybody's mind with it.
Right.
So we just do what we're as well as we can do, and people are like, great restraint. You're holding a lot back. Oh, yeah, we are.
So, lastly, even though this single series is coming out, you brought up the fact that it is eventually leading up to an album. I feel like that's something that's been a very long time coming for you, eventual Shadow Boxers album. When it can, like, how do you feel about that, knowing that that's on the horizon? Because we've talked a bit about like how the way the landscape is now and people are releasing albums. What does it mean for you guys to release an album as a band? Because there are some bands out there who do feel it's traditional in a way.
I mean, and it still it is, but also we and it's either traditional or it's like a luxury. You know, you're either like a Post Malone and you can put out an album because people are going to listen to it or buy it or just buy the vinyl so they can put it on their wall. We pride ourselves in being a contemporary band that loves somewhat traditional things. And we want to put out music that resonates with people, but we also want to put out a body of work. We want to put out a piece of art. Something that, if you want, you can listen to it and just enjoy it, and just enjoy a single, or just enjoy a couple singles, or you can buy a physical vinyl and take it home and treasure it. Because that's how we experience music. That's how we connect with music. And we want our fan base to have that option as well.
And it's not, we are, like, we love albums. And that's how we, like, prefer to consume music. And there's still some great artists out there making great albums. And this is, for us, not just a collection of songs. Like, it is a piece that is meant to be listened to top to bottom, if that's what you want to do. We are going to have it there for you. So, and it's something we've always wanted to do, and it's taken us a long time to do. And we're excited because that allows us to, like, put out songs that aren't singles. And songs that aren't singles have, like, real value to us. And we haven't had the chance to do that yet, so we're excited for the deep cuts.
And then from the business side of things, we've stripped a lot away from the complexities of our team that have kind of hamstrung us in the past. We're a lot smaller now. It feels smaller for us in the sense that it's just us in the room making the decisions. And there's a lot of fear associated with that, especially coming off of the size and scope of the Timberlake tour. So knowing that we have something good is sort of the constant source of security, making sure we set it up right so that the most number of people can hear it and love it in the way that we do is now our challenge is sort of shifting towards figuring that out. Because we've put in 6 months recording, maybe even more.
Wow.
When you think about the writing, probably 8-9 months. So some of these songs are even 4 or 5 years old that we've just dug up from in the vault. And by the way, there's 200 some songs in the vault. So it's a long time coming, and when there's been a lot of writing and a lot of prep, you just want the payoff to be right. Yeah. So there's a little bit of anxiety about getting it all set up properly. So that's where we're at right now. Fear, excitement.
Yeah. It sounds like a good place to be.
And I just want to add, I think another reason we want to put out the album is because more so than I think, not that singles can't sort of solidify an identity, but I think having a piece of art that's a statement that says this is who we are, it's also just a really great way of letting people know, like, at this point in time, this is the music that the Shadowboxers make. This is what we are about. And I think that's something that we have really struggled with in the past, to sort of let people know who we are, what they should expect. And so that's a real serious reason we wanted to come out with an album.
Yeah. That's really as good as a reason as any. Shadowboxers, thanks for chatting with me today. Really.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Appreciate it. Cause I've still got some love, hey. I've still got some songs, yeah.